This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. From being questioned about COVID-like symptoms to test results to vaccinations to having our temperatures taken by employers and businesses where we patronize, people want to know what is and is not off limits these days. Well, the short answer is it's complicated. We're talking about HIPAA, which are the privacy laws that we're all facing these days, and it was before the pandemic even, and COVID-19. Well, what can businesses ask? And for that, we are turning to two experts who have studied long and hard on this subject. We have Indiana University Northwest Professors of Health Information Management, Linda Galosi and Dorinda Sattler with us today. And ladies, thank you very much for being with us on the program.
Happy to be with you. Thank you for having us.
Well, we talk here about HIPAA, and as I mentioned earlier, it's been around long before the pandemic, of course, with other issues involving healthcare privacy and the like. Dorinda, since I guess you're the more of the specialist in the issue of privacy laws, will you explain for people that don't know what HIPAA is? They hear that term all the time, but what is HIPAA, and what organizations are basically covered by it?
Sure. So HIPAA, otherwise known as the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, it's really a very large law, inside of which are the privacy and security rules that deal with protected health information. And the privacy and security rules only apply to institutions known as covered entities. Mm-hmm. And these are certain health plans, certain healthcare providers, and healthcare clearinghouses. So I think it's important to know that not every healthcare provider is a covered entity, only if they perform certain electronic transactions like billing your insurance company for the services they provide to you, if they bill for those services electronically. So it's covered entities that deal with healthcare. So this excludes the restaurants that you visit, the stores where you purchase goods and services.
Does it seem, Linda, that that is part of the confusion that we have and maybe some of the misinformation that has gotten out there, certainly since the coronavirus pandemic hit?
I think so. Businesses that I've noticed lately, a lot of businesses have signs posted on their door that you're asked to wear a mask if you have not been vaccinated, but it's up to you if you have been. And I think a lot of people kind of feel like their rights are being violated. And I've heard individuals call out, well, that's my right under HIPAA. Mm-hmm. And that's not exactly true. You may feel like your privacy is being violated to a certain extent, but it's not covered under HIPAA. So it's not a HIPAA violation.
Now, since you focus primarily on data and security, especially, mm-hmm. essentially, and that's, of course, a big concern these days with cybersecurity issues that we know have been well publicized, mm-hmm. and not necessarily in healthcare issues, but are we finding that this particular area is even more sensitive because of the pandemic, maybe more than ever?
I'm not sure that security has been heightened because of the pandemic, but I think it has exposed the flaws in cybersecurity of our software. And that goes back to, that extends to medical devices and not just our computers themselves. I think this pandemic has just exposed a lot of flaws in our healthcare system, all over the place.
I can add something to that as well. Throughout the pandemic, the Office for Civil Rights, which is within the Department of Health and Human Services, they have put out numerous bulletins throughout the pandemic to guide covered entities on how they can deal with the privacy and security of health information related to COVID treatments and so forth.
I was going to ask that because we have all of these very complicated privacy laws that we've had to deal with many for years here because prior to the pandemic, and it's just gotten worse because of the pandemic and all the places that people can go now in particular, are there ways, I guess, we can simplify it if it can be done as to letting people know, number one, certainly we have the CDC guidelines telling us where we can and can't go, what we can and can't do, at least during the pandemic. But when it comes to dealing with businesses and employers in particular, are there ways that we can kind of simplify or at least better categorize what citizens, the average person, should know that they can or cannot do?
Well, I think that just remembering the type of institution that you're frequenting is going to be responsible under different sets of laws. Mm-hmm. So unless you're seeing a healthcare provider or you're dealing with your health insurance, then most likely HIPAA is not going to apply. Businesses and employers have other sets of laws that they are subject to. So I don't know that there's really a way to make it less complicated for the public in general. What I would say is that if you visit a healthcare provider, that you do take time to read the notice of privacy practices that they try to give you
right.
when you do visit.
Yeah, I have done that before, too, when I've gone to the doctor or gone to the clinic to be checked out for something or another. And even when I go to the lab to get blood draws, I sometimes will take a look to see what is covered here within the privacy laws. Not that I think that my laws or my privacy is going to be violated, but it just seemed to feel a bit more at ease, I suppose, if you know the procedure is going to not be publicized to everybody in the world.
Sure. And in addition to that, those notice of privacy practices inform you, the patient, of what your rights are. There are certain rights that are afforded to you as a patient related to your protected health information. So it's good to know what those are, too.
If we may, ladies, let's talk about some of the situations that the average person would go through, certainly maybe have already and needed to be clarified on, or maybe you found out by getting in trouble, I guess, or being warned about the situation. What about a situation, we'll take it first at home with the family members. What can family members or friends of the family, what can they know about a particular situation or a condition? Or even for that matter, the most important one right now is to whether you received the COVID-19 vaccine. What can you say or cannot say?
Linda, you want to take that?
As an individual, you are able to tell your family and friends anything that you would like. It's the provider or the person who administered the vaccine that should not be telling your family or friends that you have received the vaccine or that you have or have had COVID. So, you know, what you want to tell your family and friends, that's completely up to you.
Mm-hmm. Does that also...
But it's the provider's responsibility to make sure that they are not passing that information along.
Now, does that pertain also to the card that everybody's received? If you receive both of your doses of the vaccine, and you have that card from the Indiana State Department of Health that you're supposed to keep track of, keep in a safe place, does that information on that card pertain as well, too?
Yes.
That's probably one of the simplest answers, I suppose, you could probably ask from anybody, I would imagine. But it does.
Yes.
Because I know that there's...
Yeah, the card was provided by, most likely by a HIPAA-covered entity. And so that information is protected health information. And so then it's up to the individual who received the vaccine to, you know, protect that card, protect that information. Let their primary health care providers know that they've gotten the vaccine. That's very important for them to know.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about this, I guess, momentarily here about it, but let's bring up the subject of businesses and retailers that a person may visit for goods or services, whatever, and they're not covered, I understand, as covered entities. So what kind of situations do you find yourself in there if they happen to ask you that, you know, to wear a mask if you're not fully vaccinated?
Well, businesses have an obligation to protect their clientele, to provide a safe working environment for their staff. So they are well within their rights to ask patrons to mask up if they haven't been vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And while that may infer if somebody's walking into an establishment and they see the sign that says, please wear a mask if you're not vaccinated, by inference, you can look at someone and see that they have a mask on, and maybe you can determine that, wow, they're not vaccinated, or you're going to assume that someone in the establishment without a mask has been vaccinated. This isn't a violation of privacy, even though the vaccination status may be inferred, assuming that the individuals are masking up truthfully or not masking up truthfully.
Right.
But if the establishment would then say, well, why aren't you vaccinated? That's, even though that's not a HIPAA violation, that's really something that they shouldn't be asking people. It's really, your health status is none of their business. But what is their business is that you are safe to be within their confines around their other patrons and their staff.
I understand. I suppose it's more of an abundance of caution as well as trying to follow some sensible guidelines.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about for an employer who happens to ask an employee for information that they may need or put in your personal, in your office record? How does that fit into the privacy laws?
Well, employers, just like many employers require other vaccinations of their staff, or they may have you take a pre-employment physical, your COVID vaccination status, in my opinion, is really no different. Employers want to make sure that their workforce is healthy and is safe for, again, other workforce members and for their patrons. So it isn't a violation of privacy. It isn't a HIPAA violation if they ask you to be vaccinated or to provide or to indicate whether or not you've been vaccinated.
Are we going to find, Professors Glossy and Sadler, that as things get better, as the pandemic lessens, more people are vaccinated, more precautions helping to cut the number of cases and unfortunately deaths that go along with COVID-19, are we going to find that things will get maybe a little less strict? Now, the privacy laws are going to be in place regardless, I guess.
Yes, they'll always be in place. They mm-hmm. had been in place prior to the pandemic. I just think, again, the pandemic has heightened what we know or what we don't know about HIPAA privacy in healthcare. So this was just an explanation to provide the facts of what HIPAA does and does not cover.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully it will clear up, at least in some people's concerns, about what the privacy laws cover and the like. And I know that that it comes down to basically, I guess, rights in a way, to be able to decide what information you can share and with whom. And the nice thing is that there are laws, in this case it's HIPAA, because that's the way it's been set up for other cases in healthcare especially, that will help protect you and protect everybody else that you're around.
Right, and I think there are two important things for individuals to realize. First of all, they determine, for the most part, what information they can share and with whom. Now, granted, there isn't 100% control of that when you're in a hospital or you're receiving healthcare services, because there are certain other individuals and entities that need to know what's going on with you so that you can be cared for safely and appropriately. But for the most part, you decide what you share. And secondly, individuals should educate themselves, and they can do that by going on to the Department of Health and Human Services website. There's if they just Google HIPAA, they can find the HHS.gov website that talks about HIPAA for patients. And that website has a wealth of information, and it relays it in layman's terms.
Well, Professors Linda Glossy and Dorinda Sadler, who are both professors in health information management with Indiana University Northwest, thank you for spending time trying to make some sense out of all of this. And we hope that that at least in covering some of the examples and concerns and getting some of the questions answered and hopefully clear up some of the misinformation, that we've made it easier for our people to understand where the federal privacy laws fit in with the average person, especially as we're dealing with the pandemic. Thank you very much, ladies, for being with us today to talk about it.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
This is Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. The state of Indiana is demanding repayment of unemployment benefits that were legitimately sent out to Hoosiers who needed them when the COVID-19 pandemic forced them to quit working. And State Senator Karen Talion is calling for the repayments to stop. And she joins us from Ogden Dunes to talk about the issue that she outlined in a recent op-ed piece.
Nice talking to you, Chris. Thanks for having me. We have a situation going on here in Indiana that is actually going on in a lot of places across the country. Last year, when the COVID put everybody shut down from work, we had a group of people who are normally not entitled to unemployment benefits. They are people that we kind of call the gig economy, people that are self-employed or that are independent contractors who don't get unemployment benefits, yet they were all out of work. And so the federal government put in a new type of unemployment insurance. It's called Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, PUA. And so a lot of these people were able to get some kind of relief during this COVID shutdown. Well, it's now, you know, months later, all those people used that money to live, essentially. And now the federal government and the state of Indiana are going back and revisiting all those claims and basically saying, you didn't fill this form out right. You didn't show exactly the documents that we asked for. And now you have to pay this money back. And, you know, I know, we all know that during that period of time, there is what I would call organized crime. And I don't mean the mafia, but I mean organized scams, a lot of them from overseas, who would make claims for these benefits and built various, the United States out of lots of money. I'm not talking about those, of course. I'm talking about, you know, the person down the street who used to be an Uber driver or who was an independent contractor for somebody, a hair salon or whatever. And they applied for this money and they just didn't do it right. And our State of Indiana Department of Workforce Development, they have the ability to waive those repayment requests. And what I'm saying is that you know, we got $900 million from the feds that we put in. Basically, this was a gift to our unemployment trust fund. So it's not like our unemployment trust fund is out of money. And the second thing is that all those benefits, those PUA benefits, they were not paid out of our unemployment trust fund anyway. They were paid, you know, the payments came through there, but it was all federal money. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to say, look, you know, if you were a legitimate person that just didn't do it quite correctly, we can waive those repayments, and I think we should. The other thing that I just want to mention is that this is really a call out to the governor's office and to DWD because they are simply not presenting us with the information. I've been on this unemployment thing since COVID started over a year ago. And we were on weekly calls with workforce development to see how everything went. And now we've got this repayment game, and we're asking for information. How many people, how many claims, how much money, how many of these things were fraudulent? And I've been asking for that information since at least June, and now it's almost September, and we still have nothing. So, you know, our state government needs to respond to this and to help make life a little easier for some of these people who did nothing wrong.
Now, I understand that the federal government is going to end at least part of this program, perhaps all of it, next month. And I know that has an impact on getting the repayments for people that have been paid the unemployment benefits. And I know that that was part of the turnaround that was ordered by a judge. Do you think that this was going to continue on into September and later? Or will it basically just the state will just basically let things end when everything ends in Washington?
There are two different things going on. So the program that ends in September is the benefits package. These are people who are still out of work, who are still making, you know, claims, who are getting extra money. And that is really, really a separate issue from the repayment of these PUA claims. This is good. The people who collected PUA money last year may very well be back at work right now. But, you know, I mean, these people, a lot, like I said, a lot of them were in. Take a hairstylist who might have been working as an independent contractor. They got shut down. Nobody could go to the hairdresser. So she might apply for PUA benefits because she was not a regular W-2 employee, and now she's back at work, and now she gets this repayment notice. So that's a whole different category of things from the Fed, you know, from
right.
The judge decision about continuing UI benefits.
So you're still going to obviously push the Department of Workforce Development and even the governor's office to go ahead and get this information back to you, certainly, and to stop calling for these repayments of the benefits that have already been paid out.
That's right. That's right. And I did that op-ed piece, but as part of that whole effort, we're also doing a letter directly to the governor, pointing this out.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope you get some response, and soon, certainly, even if funds are not going to be available in some cases, you want to make sure that people aren't forced to have to repay money that they've obviously already had to spend because they were living on that money to begin with. So, State Senator Karen Taliaferro, thank you very much for your comments, and we hope at least you get some letters, some response back from the State House about this.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris.
2 weeks ago, a ransomware attack affected Indianapolis-based Eskenazi Health, and hospital officials are still bringing their systems back online. These kinds of attacks on healthcare facilities are becoming more frequent and more severe. SideEffects Public Media's Carter Barrett speaks with her colleague, Lauren Mavis, about the real-world implications of these kinds of attacks.
What do we know about the ransomware attack against Eskenazi Hospital?
Well, Warren, we know that on August 4th, Eskenazi Hospital experienced a ransom attack really early in the morning, and it halted the access to the electronic medical records and required ambulances to actually bypass the hospital. So they went on what's called diversion. And now, you know, nearly 2 weeks later, the hospital's still recovering, but the electronic medical records are back online. That's according to a hospital spokesperson.
And ransomware attack, what does that mean? And what are these bad actors threatening?
Yeah, a ransomware attack is when hackers will work their way into hospital systems and then take over data or systems and say that they need to be paid in order for the hospital to retrieve those systems or data. And I think Steve Long, which is CEO of Hancock Regional Hospital, and they experienced a ransomware attack in 2018, I think he put it really well.
It's as if somebody walked into your house, found the place where you keep your valuables, and put a padlock on the door. that you can't get through without their key.
Mm.
So it never left your house, and yet you don't have access to it.
And the threat is that if the hospital does not pay the ransom, that they won't have their systems back. And if they don't have a backup of their systems, then they have the potential to be gone. Or sometimes if the hospital does have backups, the hackers will say, well, we have downloaded patient records, and will threaten to sell them online illegally. And patient records obviously contain a lot of sensitive information. And so that's a tough spot for hospitals.
How common are these attacks?
Well, increasingly common. And a lot of them we never hear about publicly. And so some data points to that last year there were 26.7 million individuals impacted by healthcare data breaches. And here now in August, we've actually reached that same amount. So we are obviously on pace to exceed 26.7 million individuals. And, you know, according to the FBI and the American Hospital Association, this is happening more and more, and the attacks are more severe when they do happen.
Do we know anything about why hospitals are a target?
Yeah. So here's John Rigi, who's in charge of cybersecurity for the American Hospital Association.
They're being attacked because they know that public health and safety depends upon the availability of a hospital, and therefore creates an exigency, an urgency for the hospitals to remediate the situation. And unfortunately, that may include payment of ransom.
So basically, hospitals are a prime target.
How is the government talking about ransomware attacks?
Yeah, I mean, recently the Biden administration actually elevated ransomware attacks to a similar level as terrorist attacks. And so it's definitely become a priority. You know, we're hearing about it more and more often, where bad actors from maybe Russia, North Korea are carrying out these attacks.
Is there anything normal people can do to protect themselves?
From the people I spoke to, there's not a lot. But what you can do, which is already good advice in general, is to have hard copy records of your medical history. So if systems do go down in a hospital when you're needing care, or a hospital loses access to these files forever, you will have your own copy.
Thank you so much, Carter, for breaking this down.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lauren.
The Side Effects Public Media's Carter Barrett with Lauren Bavis. And finally today, the concert that was supposed to be a part of Governor Eric Holcomb's inaugural ball this weekend has been canceled. That concert was supposed to have been in White River State Park in downtown Indianapolis. Imagine Indiana said in a news release, quote, "Two concerts in 2 days proved too much for us to handle in the time we had. All tickets purchased will be refunded immediately," end quote. Founded back in 2017, Imagine Indiana is a nonprofit whose mission is to inspire collaboration and conversation for those who want to help. And by the way, the Boots and Black Tie Gala that is going to be held on Saturday is still going to be going on as scheduled. Tickets for that are $150 apiece. It was always delayed because of the pandemic earlier this year. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us, and I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Regionally Speaking episode.